somebody else's horoscope and you realize, oh, that sounds true for me too. And then you read a different one and, oh, that sounds true for me. What I like in Seattle, there's a paper called The Stranger that has their horoscope, which is a play on words, that it's all about having free will in the midst of whatever the stars are. So with this, but as I've tried to get into the sense of who were these men, they're staring into the sky, trying to figure out, and you know, a lot of biblical scholars, there's a lot of biblical scholarship that's tried to focus on, okay, when exactly, what was happening in the skies? Like, we can go back now and look at the skies of the time period. You can run a computer program now that will replicate what the night sky, what the stars looks like in any place in any time, because the math is really set and established. So we can go back and actually do a computer program of what the night sky would have looked like in Babylon in, you know, the time of Jesus. Like, we have the capacity to do it. And, you know, it's amazing. People go back and they say, and trying to figure out actually when was Jesus born. They, you know, the way Matthew tells the story, it was sometime before Herod's death. Scholars have usually dated Herod's death to around 4 BC. And so if you look around 5 BC or 6 BCE, there's not a whole lot going on in the skies. Maybe there's some comets or something like that. There's other scholars that are questioning, okay, was it really 4 BCE? You can make a case it was actually in 1 BCE. And if you look back then a couple years into the year 2 or 3, there's actually really interesting things going on in the sky if you're sitting in Babylon as an astrologer looking at the sky. And part of what happens in September of the year 3 in BCE is if you were looking in the sky in September, Jupiter, which is the king planet, considered the king of the planets, right? Jupiter does this thing where it as from our perspective, it passes by Regnum, which Regnum means king, so it's the king star. So the king planet is in the king's near the king star, and because of the way the planets and everything works, the constellations are constant, but the planets are move in background, and so Jupiter seems to kind of circle the king star during the month of September. And it does this in the constellation of Leo, which is the constellation of the lion, which is just curious because lion is the Judah, the tribe of Judah, which is the tribe of David. The symbol for Judah is a lion, right? So there's people who've made a big deal about this, that in the year 3 AD, Jupiter, the king planet, is circling Regnum, the king star, in the constellation of Leo. And then 9 months later, in June of the year 2, Jupiter and Venus are close enough together that they look like one star without canceling each other out. And so it would be the brightest object in the sky, right? And so they're like, oh, Jesus was conceived in September and was born in June. And then the wise men come, right? And they make this journey, if they are potentially from Babylon, that's a 1,500 kilometer journey. When Ezra and the Israelites did it after their captivity, it took them 4 months to make that journey. You know, that's with women and children and old people. But if you're going to walk, you're probably walking on foot, so you're making this long journey. Have kind of dismissed these stories as being, you know, whether or not that's it. You know, people debate, they're like, are these stories real? When did it really happen? Other people say, well, this is just kind of a pious story that Matthew made up to kind of encourage worship. But there's something about, my imagination this week was captured by this possibility of these men looking up into the sky and seeing, you know, these great deeds that are happening in the sky and being not only filled with wonder just because of the beauty of it all, they're filled with a sense of a desire to follow and figure it out and try to see what's happening, right? And that there's something about these things that are happening and this Jupiter and Regnum thing that's happening in the constellation of Leo that's making them think, oh, maybe we need to go west to see what's happening, or something's happening over there in this place. And then there's Jupiter and Venus lining up. And it just sparks something within them to want to go. And they go and they tell Herod, they go because they want to worship this new king. which is an odd detail. It's just an interesting detail of the text, that they want to worship. And that, for me, has always been, like, worship. What is worship? Worship has always felt like a... I know when I was a kid and we were going to go to worship, and worship felt very stale, and like it was the most boring thing I could imagine doing, was going to worship. It's like, why would you do that? And yet we did it every Sunday anyway. As I've thought more about what is worship, worship is basically, how do you align your life? How do you align the energies of your life? I think we worship all the time. I mean, whatever we focus on and put our life towards, that in some sense is what we worship. Like, you can worship hockey. Like, hockey can be the source of your worship. You know, good wine can be the source of your worship. You know, travel could be the source of your worship. You know, we can worship lots of different things. It's what is it that captures your heart? What is the thing that captures your heart? And that, for me, is like these men, as they're looking up in the sky, there's this sense of longing for something. The sense of longing for beauty, longing for the awe that they see as they look in the sky. And it motivates them to travel 1,500 kilometers. Because what they've got, where they're around. And they get there, and they find a king. They actually find the king of the Jews, who is Herod at the time, who is, at that point, probably one of the most powerful kings Israel ever had. You know, and one of the most significant after David and Solomon, given and has left more of a legacy than Solomon or David. Masada and the temple, and there's all these buildings in Israel that are the legacy of what Herod built. Like, if anybody was worthy of worship in the ancient world, if anyone had power, it was Herod. But Herod's power was the kind of power that wants to keep prop itself up. Herod's power was the kind of power that wants to perpetuate itself, that wants to control, that wants to dominate. These men didn't come to worship a power that dominates and controls. Instead, I mean, the way the story is framed in Matthew, these men find their way to Bethlehem, to this baby that's lying in a manger. Right? Which, this is where the pious story comes in, the symbolism. I don't think they're worshiping a baby. I don't think it's the baby that motivates them to make that kind of travel. But it's what this baby symbolizes. It's a different kind of being a king, which is what the church has always talked about, is that this is a different kind of kingship. This is a different kind of power. This is a power that's oriented towards love. And it's a power that's oriented towards a love that is giving of the self-giving. A power that's oriented towards healing and transformation and restoration, which is what the life and career of Jesus, what Jesus ultimately symbolizes. That there's something here that is characteristic of the heart of God. That's what these men, they're coming to, that for them is something worth bowing down, paying homage to, of prostrating yourself to, of orienting your life to, is a way of love that is giving and self-giving, a way that's committed to healing, a way that's committed to transforming this world. I think that for me is the meaning of this story. The significance of it is that these guys aren't Jews. They're not even part of the Jewish tradition. And yet they're drawn to something there at the heart of, you know, they're drawn to something that blows their minds, that fills them with awe, that astonishes them like a night sky. Amen.